we out here, boy. What's up?
Word on the street is there's a lot going down.
On the streets.
On the streets. Only on Red Radio.
Hello, good people. You're welcome to another episode of On The Street. I'm your boy, Adetola, and you're listening to Red Radio. Today, we're going to be going deep into the medical world, and I got a special guest that is vast in that field. Her name is Dr. Zainab Shinkafi Bagudu, and she's the first lady of Kebbi State, and she's going to be taking us on a medical tour. So get your pen and paper, and let's get right into it.
Red Radio.
This right here.
Powered by UBA, Africa's global bank.
So on the line with me is Dr. Zainab Shinkafi Bagudu. She is a consultant pediatrician and an advocate for women's health with a particular focus on cancer. You're welcome to our show, ma'am.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yes, we have a lot of questions lined up for you because there's a lot. Yeah, but we'll take it as quick as we can. And firstly, I'm sure a lot of people, our listeners, would want to know more about you. I mean, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Basically, I'm a doctor, like you said. I'm a children's doctor. Of course, when you deal with children, you happen to deal more with the mothers. And that's how I got involved in women's advocacy, women's health. I'm a mother. I'm a wife, very happily married and happily mothering. When I say mother, I have so many children. I lost count, so I won't tell you how many children I have. My work spans from my medical career into a lot of advocacy, which has come about from the Medicaid Cancer Foundation, which we started about 12 years ago to help cancer patients. And it also extends into my work supporting my husband in Kebbi State as the chief executive. That takes me into contact with a lot of women, children, youth issues, and we do empowerment, we do health issues, we do a lot of education, both boy and girl child education, and so many other things. Typically, my life is divided into maybe about four aspects, and I'm very, very good at managing all together and multitasking. I've learned over the years. I'm going to be 53 soon, so I've had this experience in multitasking. I think that's a short summary.
Interesting. Talking about multitasking, I was going to ask that question. How are you able to manage being a practicing doctor as well as being the first lady of a state? There's a lot of responsibilities in there. How do you balance both sides?
First of all, they all kind of relate. Everything flows into each other. I might be seeing a patient, but that knowledge will help me to translate to what is happening with the, seeing a pediatric patient in my middle-class clinic. But then I have immunization issues in Kebbi where we're talking about how we're going to improve immunization costs for our children. And so that knowledge helps me. I run the different offices and I have a very wonderful team. And support is the most important thing that we all need. Once we have support in our lives at any level, then it makes it easier to be able to multitask. I can always call on my team. I call on different people to help me for different things. And we all work together. The foundation runs itself, but of course I have to be there. I have a diagnostic center as well, which also runs itself, and they complement each other. If we need some programs in Kebbi, we can go to them and ask them to do it for us and ditto the foundation. So it all complements each other. I think you just wake up and decide to do it and you can do it really.
So talking about cancer is one of the leading causes of death worldwide and in Africa, with about 1.28 million new cancer cases and 970,000 cancer deaths are projected for 2030 by the International Agency of Research on Cancer. But a lot of people do not understand what causes cancer. Can you help us understand a little bit the cause of cancer exactly?
Cancer, really, when we say cancer, is the disruption of the normal. So normal bodily functions can become abnormal. When the cell is growing, it's supposed to go through a certain cycle after one after the other. But when there is a trigger, which can be either due to the fact that simply because you're a woman, as we all know, women get more breast cancer, age as we get older, hereditary factors, the genes are sending something. So I'm thinking the question now. The genes are sending some messages, some inherited messages that have been inherited in your own system to your parents, can now become a trigger for a certain cancer. It could be lifestyle, smoking, drinking, eating the right type of food. Also, lack of exercise has been shown. There are some infectious agents that cause cancer, the human papillomavirus, Kaposi's sarcoma. These are all related to some viruses. Then we also have things like radiation. Radiation can be a factor in causing cancer. So cancer is really an abnormal situation that arises at the cellular level. When I say cell, if you imagine a house, the body as a house, and each of the blocks, the bricks that you use to build the house, the cell. So instead of it laying one after the other, when there's this disruption, which I have enumerated, all these factors, age, sex, genetic, radiation, it just starts to go in an uncontrollable and disorganized manner. So everything is wobbly and then it becomes bigger when you have a tumor and then it's not coordinated. The messages that is being sent to those bricks, they don't go in an orderly manner. Normally, it's very orderly. And you can see that even with skin, sometimes it gets shed because there's a message coming from somewhere. And I always like to mention that with cancer, any part of the skin that is spread by blood can get cancer. All the parts of the body that you can imagine, as long as there is blood flowing there, it can get cancer. The only parts that don't get cancer are the tissues like hair. You have never heard about cancer of the hair because there's no blood in the hair. The nails, the teeth, these are the parts that don't get cancer. You never hear about cancer of this part. But of course, there's cancer of the mouth and so on. So in a nutshell, these are the things that cause it. And more, because of our sedentary lifestyle, the kind of food we're eating, and also infectious agents, the use of antibiotics, killing off the good bacteria and letting the bad ones thrive, you know, we're getting more, a higher incidence of cancer, environmental pollution, you know, so many issues now in modern day life that was not there before is making us to see cancer more and more.
Wow, that's quite scary, knowing everywhere blood gets to is prone to cancer. You earlier mentioned Medicaid Cancer Foundation. Can you tell us more about that?
Foundation is a foundation that we started to support the work we're doing in the diagnostic center. When I finished training, I trained as a pediatrician in the United Kingdom, and I came home and I found that we needed to do some things a bit different. So one of the first things I did was to start diagnosis to support my colleagues, the medical doctors, doing tests and so on. And then I also wanted to do a well woman center the way I had seen it being practiced abroad. We do not have a national screening system where each woman or man gets a call at a certain age to come and do a test because you're of this age and you're at risk of this cancer because you're a man or woman. It's not happening. But I thought we could do our own awareness on the center because we were doing the breast test, that is the mammogram, and have it in a way like a well woman clinic so that women could come get their breasts either ultrasound or mammogram, which is an x-ray of the breast that we recommend for women, African women, once they're age 35 every 2 years. And then also the cervical one, that is the head of the entry of the uterus, the cervical cancer test. So these are the two major things we were doing. So we're doing it just like an open day. Women invite people to come and learn. We'll do health promotion talks and tell them what to do. And in a very short time in Abuja, we were able to have such a large followership. And it was obvious that we couldn't cope with it. So we needed a structure and a platform to be able to handle all that. And that's how the Medicaid Cancer Foundation was born. We started the foundation and initially we were doing awareness. And then we moved to screening, which is when we just test large numbers of population for any cancer. And we focused on breast, cervical, and prostate cancer. And of course, as soon as you find these issues, they come to you and they say, oh, what do I do with this? And then we started treatment support. Well, we send them to navigation, to patient navigation is what it's called. We send them off somewhere, okay, I have a lump. All right, fine, go to this place and get the lump removed. And then it comes, they come back to you. Oh, they told me it's cancer, what do I do? I don't have the money. So we have to start raising funds. And that's how the NGO grew. Along the time, I started working in policy as an advocate, influencing policy, working with Nigerian bodies and international bodies, government agencies, and trying to get the best outcomes for cancer control, mostly in low-middle-income countries. Like, for instance, last year, we were able to really advocate to the National Healthcare Insurance Agency of Nigeria to ensure that cancer control, cancer treatment, diagnosis is included in under the NHIS. It's not completed yet, but we're glad that a lot of progress has been made. And so patients that have insurance coverage in Nigeria can get some cancer care. So in a nutshell, that's what the Medicaid Foundation does. We work with, we have different programs, so many different programs, I can't mention it, but we focus on young adults, educating school children, getting them to know what cancer is all about, so that they can start their life the right way. And then also we work with traditional rulers. We have that program whereby we work, we engage them and they can help us to spread the message into the communities at the grassroots level where the awareness and knowledge is really poor and where you're more likely to find attitudes that will hinder the better outcomes that we're trying to achieve.
So October was the Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and this cancer is the most commonly diagnosed cancer all across Africa and also is the leading cause of cancer in general. Can you tell us what activities your organization is doing around this?
October is the month of most cancer advocates. It's the commonest cancer in the world, not just in Africa. Breast cancer, unfortunately, has become such a big cancer that is causing so many deaths around the world. And Africa is not excluded, Nigeria is not excluded. As of an organization, we first started, you mentioned, with the screening, and we still do that. Typically, every October for us will include offering discounted or free screening, depending on how much sponsorship we're able to get, because somebody has to pay for it. So we apply for grants, we apply for corporate sponsorship. We've had a very good relationship with corporate bodies, one of which our major sponsors is the UBA Foundation. This enables to work with another foundation called Jai Foundation to immunize, but that has to do with girls for HPV and cervical cancer. So typically in October, we will do the awareness in schools. We go to different secondary schools. We like to focus on secondary schools because at that age, they're more vulnerable. They're just at the age where they understand what's happening and they can make the right decisions. You know, you can start to influence them before they go out into the world and start smoking and drinking and things like that. So we educate them. We have a lot of resource materials. We've written books, some puzzles, easy to read things that will teach them about cancer. And then we also have the screening. We offer discounted or free screening to women around the country. It's not just in Abuja or in the north or in Kebbi. We do it around wherever we have the funding. And sometimes we'll have somebody come to us and say, okay, great, I want to screen. I want to pay for 100 women to be screened for cancer. Right now, as I speak to you, there's one going on in the National Women's Center in Abuja. They are screening market women and we're doing the testing for them with ultrasound. And they're there, they're going to have a walk, which brings me to the other major activity for which Medicaid Foundation is really well known. That is our walk. We have a walk, an awareness walk in October. And it's a massive, massive work. And it has different aims. It's a fundraiser. It's an exercise event. It's a fun event. You know, people come there to meet. I've had people fall in love at the Medicaid walk. We haven't had our first wedding yet, but I'm hoping that we will have the first wedding soon. People come there to network. Some, you see business cards flying all over the place. You know, so many some just come to take a selfie with a celebrity, and it's a massive walk in Abuja. Unfortunately, this year we have shifted away from October into November. We hope we'll be able to have it in November because of all the issues that we're having around the interactiveness, and we didn't want to contribute to us to that because, like I said, it's a really big walk, and we need to guarantee everyone's safety. And at the same time, the youth are very, very fond of the Medicaid walk, and they've all been on my case. When are we going to walk? When are we going to walk? And it creates a lot of awareness. People see us, what are these walks doing? And they join. We sell all the walk paraphernalia, we raise funds, and after the walk, we're able to help cancer patients. We pay for their treatments, we pay for their tests and different things. And that has really helped us grow over the years. The bigger the event, the more people know about it and the more they want to sponsor it. So this year, again, the other disruption was COVID-19, and we were going to have it in batches. And I'm sure we'll still be able to have a walk, but not in October. Now, October is Breast Cancer Month, but I feel that we've always approached it differently. For us in Africa, in Nigeria, we do not have that advantage, or should I say, that leverage of being able to say, oh, we're going to do each month separately. If we're putting so much resources and energy into events in one month, then we use it to create awareness on all the cancers so that we don't leave any particular section of society out. For instance, if you tag it a breast cancer walk, you'll find that the men might stay away and they will not come. So we just call it awareness month. For us, we focus on breast because it's the most common. We call it a cancer awareness month, and we do cost-effective screening, breast cancer screening, cervical cancer screening as well. And the walk as well is attended by both men and women.
We look forward to that sometime in November. Hopefully the social distancing restrictions won't be much of a hindrance.
Yes, yes.
Listen to me.
We'll be right back in minutes. Yeah. Red Radio.
It's big, it's better, it's bumper. Stand a chance to win 2 million Naira cash today when you open a UBA bumper account. You could also win 100,000 monthly shopping allowance, a consolation cash prize of 500,000, and so much more. So what are you waiting for? Dial *919*20# and get on the bumper side of life. Terms and conditions apply. UBA. Africa's Global Bank.
Welcome back to our show. Still on the line with me is Dr. Zainab Shinkafi Bagudu. So earlier on, you mentioned UBA Foundation. Please tell us, how has UBA Foundation and Medicaid Cancer Foundation collaborated to help educate people about breast cancer?
You see, one of the things that we've been talking about of late in healthcare is universal health coverage. And universal health coverage just talks about getting every person in the society to be covered by some form of insurance. And we do not have, not all our people are working, as in they're not all working, sorry, I meant. And UBA Foundation, one of our partners, we're talking about getting sustainable partnerships to be able to cover our citizens and indigents. People do not see local foundations as development partners. Medicaid Cancer Foundation is a development partner. We all give back to society one way or the other. So by forming these kind of partnerships, we are able to reach more people at our grassroots level and ensure that that coverage is more universal. 90% of the people in Kebbi are rural agricultural farmers. That is their occupation. It does not mean that they can afford to pay some form of health coverage for themselves. But their work is not structured. Their income is not structured. So we need the work that the foundations are doing at the grassroots to be able to put together all this income in a way that can help to improve our healthcare. Working with UBA Foundation for us has been an absolute delight and pleasure. I think the partnership would be about 5 years now. And basically, since what is to empower human life and to make life more sustained, more meaningful to everyone, it kind of keys in. The focus of both is key in. Education is a primary focus for them. We can also educate people at the grassroots more and more. So by leveraging on the areas that we have good knowledge and we're able to cover, which is in this case is cancer, we can educate more people from the grassroots, from the middle class, and from even the well-to-do members of society. So it has worked well for us, and I hope that as the years progress, we'll be able to make it more sustainable and meaningful so that everybody can benefit more. And it's one partnership that I really, really appreciate.
Shout out to UBA Foundation and the Medicaid Cancer Foundation as well. Well done. So a lot of people believe cancer is an automatic death sentence. Is this true or is just a myth?
It is not. The reason why the people see it as a death sentence is because we're only looking at the late stage and the people that get it late. So that's when we know about it. But like I just explained to you, 95%, if I scored stage 1 and 2, I have a 95% chance of survival. How is that a death sentence? It is not. It just depends on how body and where we all become, have our breast screening test, have our pap smear, have our prostate test. And if we catch it earlier, once something is going wrong, then we can easily get it treated. Like I said earlier, we didn't talk about costs. And this is another place where foundations like UBA are very helpful in helping the less to do to afford their care. What happens is that now for a round of chemotherapy in youth NSI center, you may be paying up to 600,000 naira. Now, this is a lot. It is a lot. I'm not going to say it sounds a lot, but how many people are going to be able to afford that without some form of support? They can afford 1-2 cycles, and then after that, what happens? I mean, the center is an absolutely wonderful center. We had so many before, and then they all went bad. But with the partnership with the NSIA and LUT, we've been able to have a world-class standard center that I can beat my chest anywhere in the world and say, yes, Nigeria has this. But to maintain that those machines is expensive. And so the cost of chemotherapy, of radiotherapy, has to be that expensive. Otherwise, we will reverse back to the 7 dead ones that we used to talk about 4 years ago. So we need more insurance coverage and more of the well-to-do helping the not-so-well-to-do. And this is the situation. So I don't think it's a death sentence. I just think we need to put more effort into building our healthcare, financing our healthcare, and helping it to reach those that can't afford it, and even those that can afford it. One of the things that the federal government has done of late is to start an indigent cancer patient fund. 720 million naira was set aside for the very first time, and this is one of the advocacies that I was talking about that I have been involved in. For about 4 years with the Healthcare Federation, some pharmaceutical companies, we lobbied and lobbied very seriously until for the first time in the 2020 budget, this sum was appropriated strictly for the use of cancer patients, breast, cervix, and cervical cancer patients. A committee was just inaugurated by the Minister of Health, Professor Sadi Ohanire. I'm a member of that committee, to fix the modalities of how the common man with all these cancers I've mentioned is going to be able to use that money. Now, if I tell you that a round of chemo is 600,000 and you do the math of we need 6 cycles, somebody needs 6 cycles, 12 cycles, and 720 million, and you look at how many millions of Nigerians have this disease, it's not a huge amount. However, it is a start. It is a start, it's a pool and a seed fund that we hope that other corporate bodies, other insurance companies, other pharmaceutical companies, service providers in the healthcare industry will be able to chip in. It might not be in terms of money, but they might be able to monetary donations. But they can say, I have this drug that treats cancer. This is another thing we've been doing in the foundation. We get discounts from the major farmers, and they've done it very well for us, as well as steady state. And you can have it if you're in this scene. You can have the drug for prostate or treatment or breast cancer at 50% discount. So I think that's a good step and is a way to go about it as well. I talk too much.
It's okay. You didn't speak too much. It's a lot of knowledge we are gaining here. Talking about knowledge and myths, there's a common myth around breast cancer, especially for the men. You see, they believe it is only women that can have breast cancer, and particularly women over 50. How true is this?
99%. Everybody that has a breast can get breast cancer. And men do have breast tissue. It's just not as much as the female. 99% is women. However, 1% do get breast cancer. I've seen some in Nigeria. There are male breast cancer cases. And unfortunately, it is a very aggressive type of cancer. So that needs to be debunked. Men do get breast cancer, 1%. The important thing is look for a lump. It's easier to find a lump in the male breast compared to the female breast. So keep on looking for a lump all the time.
Well noted. So all men listening, you are not exempted from breast cancer. Note that. It is also believed that it is a hereditary condition. How high is the possibility of an offspring having cancer if one or both parents have had at least one form of cancer before?
I will not give you a figure because it depends. There has to be some genetic calculations, and it's a very complex thing, but there is a higher chance. It is higher than your next blood that does not have that history in his or her family. It works with some cancers, and that is all part of the calculations. If I were going to calculate a woman that we're talking about breast cancer, and it's her mother that has it, then the factor I use to calculate will be different than if I'm calculating a woman with a daughter and her father had liver cancer. What are her chances of getting cancer? The answer would be different. But it is higher. It's a first-degree relative, particularly female to female, and the generation as well. Is this one generation, two generations? My grandmother had breast cancer. I'm not as at risk of it as I would be if it was mother that had it. You know, so that's the way it works. But it's higher. There is a hereditary factor. It means that it's in your genes. There are some genes that have been discovered. We've had famous Nigerian researchers like Professor Funmilayo Olofade, who was really well celebrated in the United States, that discovered what is known as the BRCA gene. The BRCA gene is a gene that once you have that gene, it's a very high tendency for having breast and ovarian cancer. And we've heard famous cases of some celebrities like Angelina Jolie that had double mastectomy because she tested positive to the BRCA gene. And this BRCA gene is so potent, I would say, that sometimes even after the double mastectomy, because the gene is just so strong and sending a message to that particular test area, you must get cancer, you're going to get cancer, you're going to get cancer, something like that. Even after the double mastectomy, they still come down with cancer of the chest wall, the pectoral muscles of the chest wall. So this is unfortunate, but this is something that was discovered by a Nigerian Professor Olofade, like I said, and it exists. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's not the same. The treatments, there are different levels of treatment and potencies of the drugs that are used, and even the radiotherapy. It has to be stronger. Most of the time, they hit it harder, and the chances of survival become less when it's a relapse.
Interesting. So tell us, Dr. Zainab, what health precautions do you advise to reduce the chances of getting cancer?
It's easy and simple. Most of us, we really do know what is good and what is bad. Even for those that drink alcohol and smoke, Smoking is a big no-no in all societies today. We need to cut that out of our system. I'm not even going to go into drug abuse or anything like that, but smoking cigarettes is totally outlawed now. And people should avoid it as much as possible, either primary or secondhand smoke. Lifestyle. We live in a time when, unfortunately, we're not as active as we should be and as we used to be. And if we make that little extra effort to just try and put some form of physical activity into our daily routines, then it helps. And of course, the kind of food that we eat. The typical African diet on its own is healthy. But however, the way it is processed and cooked is what kills it. We overcook our vegetables, we put too much oil, we put too much spices. These are all things that are bad. I always use the example of a bottle of granite oil. If you go to your average English family, they buy one liter bottle of oil and they put it in their kitchen, in their cupboard, and it's there for a month or something. Here we buy a huge gallon to cook rice and stew, and it is gone in 1 week. You know, it's depending on the size of your family. No, seriously, do you see those gallons when you go abroad? Even the bigger ones that they sell, it's not as big as our own. That's garawa of granite oil. It doesn't exist anywhere. So we need to cut that out. We need to cut out things like that from our diet. And not just for cancer, it will have a beneficial effect on other chronic diseases like hypertension and diabetes.
Oh, nice. Right. You're very, very correct. Thank you for that information. Okay. So I have two more questions before I, you know, let you go. But I have one question. This is personal. I grew up with this in my head, and I want to debunk it because I hope it's not true. If you stand in front of a microwave oven, they say when the microwave oven is on and you're standing in front of it, you are exposing yourself to radiation of cancer. Is this true? Because I grew up standing. You know, when you're warming your food, you're just standing there waiting for it to be done.
You're not standing.
So is this true?
It's not just standing in front of it. My mother doesn't like microwaving. She banned it from her house. And when my dad was alive and he had prostate cancer, she wouldn't let us use it anywhere around the house either. So, there is radiation, there is. And it's one of the lifestyle changes that have come into our life. The research on it is very controversial. A lot of strong papers say, yes, it does. And there are other equally strong ones that say, no, it doesn't, in terms of especially standing in front of it. But the impact on your food is definitely higher. Is higher, and if we can avoid it, then we should avoid it, because these are all the lifestyle modernization, environmental pollution things that we now have, including the mobile phone. Everything about it is still out there. Then you get one report saying, a study saying there's no link. Tomorrow there's another study saying there's a link. But bottom line is, these things were not there before, and our incidence and prevalence rates were not as high. Now they're there, our prevalence rates are going up. So we need to just make a sensible judgment call. If you can avoid it, then avoid using the microwave. It's that simple.
Thank you for that. I'm going conventional. Conventional oven.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
So is there a possibility of a vaccine for cancer coming soon?
We have a vaccine for the cervical cancer. This cancer is different, and the vaccine's rate for it is all different. Right now, the most successful one is the human papillomavirus vaccine, which is a virus that causes cervical cancer and at least six other types of cancers, oral, anal, and so on. And it helps to prevent alongside early screening and the right education. It has been found to reduce cervical cancer rates by 95%. There are countries that are on the way to eliminating cervical cancer just by the introduction of this vaccine into their primary system. And Nigeria is going to join. We have Australia and Rwanda in Africa that are far, far gone into delivering HPV vaccine. Luckily, we're glad to see that Nigeria is going to join the league of countries that are giving HPV vaccination free to our girls starting from 2021. The NPACDA has announced that we're going to start this. The Vice President has announced, and I'm involved in the preparations as well. And I know that it might not come in January as we had planned it, but we will start in 2021. It should be included as part of our routine immunization schedule. It's available now, but it has to be paid for out of pocket. So if we're able to immunize our girls with it, then we can work towards eliminating cervical cancer globally once we get rid of that virus.
Excellent. So before you go offline, what is your take-home message for the listeners today?
Well, I'd like to say thank you for giving me the opportunity, and thank you to those that have managed to listen to me from the beginning to the end. I hope that you take one thing I have said. If you can't take all, take one of the things and build upon that knowledge. And most of all, don't keep it to yourself. Spread the word, spread the message. The more people that are aware, the bigger our chances of beating cancer. And we can do it. It's not a lot. It just needs a little bit of discomfort and lifestyle changes, and then it becomes normal and it's no more discomfort. So I say thank you for all the support that we get year in, year out as well, to our donors, our workers, our ladies and gentlemen, everybody that supports us. I'd like to say a very big and wonderful thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Zainab. It was awesome having you on our show, and we look forward to that walk later in November.
Yes, I hope so. Have a wonderful day.
So there you have it. That was Dr. Zainab Shinkafi Bagudu, First Lady of Kebbi State, telling us a lot about cancer awareness and what a couple of things that we need to know. I hope you all learned a lot of things. I sure did. So I'm going to be signing out right now. Remember, this is On The Streets, where we catch up with anybody, anywhere, and we drop new episodes every week. So till next time, take care of yourselves and stay safe.
This is Red Radio, powered by UBA, Africa's global bank.